south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, there are lots of Canadians listening to this show. In fact, at every one of my Expat Insider seminars, I've had at least one or more of them. And they're also nice and congenial, and they rarely use the F-bomb as a filler, like so many Americans do. They actually use it as an adjective to punctuate something serious or something they feel really strongly about. When speaking of Americans, here's something very interesting that I just picked up on. You know, until recently, I never realized that Latin Americans categorize us gringos and gringas in different ways. Some of us, to them, are more gringa or gringo than others. And I'm not talking about the way we look here, whether we've got blue or green or brown eyes. Nor does it have to do with the color of our skin or our hair or how tall we are. Though that's a little complicated too. But first, some background. Now, you longtime listeners may recall my stories about Decameron all-inclusive beach hotels. You remember I mentioned that I'm usually the only gringo there, except maybe one or two retired couples, one of the pair being of Latino ancestry and one being a pure gringo or gringa, which is why they knew all about Decameron's all-inclusive packages and such in the first place. Now remember, if you go to the Decameron all-inclusives, they're about half the price as some of the other ones, but they speak nothing but Spanish. Meaning, if you don't speak Spanish, you're pretty lost. Which is why 99.9% of the 2,000 or so people at the resort at any given time are Latinos. Now, like any other all-inclusive resort, at night they have shows in an indoor or outdoor amphitheater, depending if it's raining or not. And I mentioned in a past show that at the beginning of the performance, the MC will say, all right, who's from Colombia? And quite a few hands would go up. Who's from Salvador, Brazil, Honduras, whatever. Each time, 50 or 100 hands would go up and people would cheer. And when they get to who's from the United States, maybe 50 people will raise their hands, which at first would blow my mind because many times I was the only gringo in the whole place. And I knew it. No one looked or spoke like me. How could they be from the United States? Well, the thing is, they're really not. They're just bragging. Because as it turns out, every last one of those people who raise their hands are born and bred Latinos that somehow got to the States, and they are legal, and some of them maybe even citizens, because after 10 years with a green card, you can apply for U.S. nationality. But, you know, I've spoken to a lot of them. It never fails. They mosey up to me and start talking. Always in pretty good English because they've been up there a long time and they're making enough money to come back and forth and go to these Decameron things anyway. And they do tell me their stories. And they tell me about those amnesty plans they got in on. And they tell me that they no longer feel like Latin Americans. They feel like Americans, and that's why they're talking to me. I've heard them tell me they love their country of origin, Salvador, Guatemala, whatever, but they're Americans now. They really have nothing in common with the folks back home. And they definitely say that with an air of superiority. And man, do they like to show off that they can afford the real Adidas and Reebok crap and real bling too. Yep, it's all about superficially impressing the folks back home who they say they have not much in common with anymore. The fact is, most of them snuck into the U.S. as kids illegally along with their parents. And eventually, after a long enough time without getting pinched, they qualified for one of those Bush or Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Reagan or Obama's amnesty programs. But in reality, they're not at all like second or third or tenth generation Americans with European heritage. They haven't really so-called melted into the melting pot. They're still little chunks floating around in it. You know, as un-PC as this sounds, and I don't care, they've sort of got a foot in both worlds and don't quite fit in either one. Believe me, I met a lot of them at these Decamerons. They come up to me because they really don't have much in common with the folks back home. For one thing, they have a lot more dough, and they look it. And they'll come right out and tell you. And sometimes they'll also come right out and tell you how they're paying for this little Decameron vacation for some of the extended family in the home country, too. It's really more than a gift from the kid who left home and made good. It's also an opportunity for them to put on the dog and show all the people back home that they've made it. And they're legal in the States. Yeah, they strut their stuff and their designer clothes, all right. Sure, they treat the folks back home to a Decameron vacation most could never afford by themselves, but Mom, Grandpa, and Uncle Tulio have to put up with their arrogance. Now, of course, according to Latin standards, these are people who've made it up in the States. They could be working in a factory, owners of their own small businesses, garbage men, truck drivers. In fact, you wouldn't believe how many of these guys I've met who said they were truck drivers. I bet you didn't think a truck driver could afford to take his whole family every year to an all-inclusive vacation package in a foreign country. Well, you can if you go to Decameron. Now, I recall one Latin guy bragging to me that he was making 55 grand a year as a truck driver, more than 10 times the salary of his relatives in Salvador. So what's this got to do with anything? Well, let me connect a few dots for you. Not so long ago, I was talking to a couple of beautiful Latinas, and we were discussing love, romance, mating, and dating between gringos, gringas, and Latinos and Latinas. Now, as it turns out, both of them had relatives up in the States. One of them had a sister married to an American. I said, oh, so does he speak Spanish? She said, of course, he's an Americano. And I paused for a second and said, American, Americano, right? She said, yeah. And I said, wait a minute, where I come from up in Chicago, I don't know of any gringo that speaks Spanish. She said, he's not a gringo, he's an Americano. Now I was really confused. I said, what's the difference? And she said, you, Johnny, you're a gringo. You're an Americano, Americano, American, American. I said, what? Then she says, well, when Latinos up in the States get their green cards and are legal or even their citizenship, they're Americanos. But you, Johnny, you're an Americano, Americano, an American, American. Now, if you had a conversation like this with a fresh new green gringo or even a gringo that's been down 5 or 10 years, it would likely go right over his head. But I was starting to get it now. It came to me. I was seeing the difference. Turns out, that was news to me. The Latins here in Latin America make their own distinction between Caucasian gringos like me, European ancestry and all that, and Latinos who are in the United States, whether they've got citizenship or green cards or not. They are, by Latin definition, Americanos. But us gringos and gringos with European ancestry, we're not just Americans, we're Americano Americanos, American Americans. You got it? Confused yet? So now you know, if you meet a Latino or Latino here in Latin America, and he or she has given you the rundown on the family tree, that is, who's living up in the States, they always will tell you that. To them, it's sort of bragging rights. To us, it just kind of makes us feel a little uneasy. Anyway, they'll say things like, my sister's an Americana, or my brother's married to an Americana. And what that really means is they're married to a Latino or Latina who's got their residency or your green card, whatever, in the States. And when you hear a Latino or Latino say their relative's married to an Americano Americano, well, that means a real live gringo or gringa married into the family. But believe me, that's kind of rare. And that's a real feather in the hat of a Latin family when they've got a relative up in the States who's married to an Americano Americano. That means they're living the first world life all the way, nice burbs and all that, and generally not in the Latin barrio where they'd be living if they were married to just an Americano. And I know all this sounds terribly un-PC, but I'm just giving the facts. That's why this show is called The Expat Files Living in Latin America. So if you want it PC sugar-coated or you want someone to lie to you, check out the mainstream media pinheads or podcasts coming out of the mainstream. So now you know the difference between Americano and Americano Americano. That is, an American and an American American. Oh man, I've been down here more than 27 years now, and I just discovered that little nuance in the last month or so. You see, that just proves no one's a guru. You're always learning. That's why you have to stay flexible and keep your mind open as much as you can. So next time when I'm at a Decameron or any all-inclusive Latin resort, after the MC says, are there any Americanos in the audience? I'm going to stand up and say, Americano, Americano. And I'll bet you a Bitcoin, I'll be the last man standing. So then what about Canadians? Well, these days, the word is that the Canadian government is open to immigration from Latin America. So lots of Latinos I've spoken to, that is lower and middle class Latinos, that formerly wanted to sneak into the States are finding out there are some legal ways to get into Canada, even if you've got absolutely no skills, because they have a shortage of agricultural and factory workers. And it's not just rumor either. I've been reading about it in the papers. So going to Canada has suddenly become a hot topic. On chicken buses, street corners, with shoeshine boys, and at quince años parties. And speaking of Canada, well, they're even more socialistic, more heavily taxed than people in the States. And many have reached the breaking point. They're so pissed off, they're moving along with their plan B. So as unskilled, uneducated Latinos move northward, astute gringos and Canadians are moving south. Whoa. Which is why, and it's awful funny, every time I take my expat insider group to meet my gringo friend who owns a couple of factories that would be sweatshop-style maquilas, Of course, his are not sweatshops. We go through them and prove that. But anyway, it never fails. The very first words coming out of his mouth as he addresses our group, he says, "You know, what you're doing here completely baffles my workers. Their dream being somehow to get to the U.S. and Canada, and they watch you come down here, and their brains just can't process that." And the funny thing is, they're working for him. He's a gringo. He's the boss. He, the gringo, came down and created their jobs. So you'd think they'd put two and two together. That's what gringos and expats do. They come down and innovate and create. All right, so I started this rant talking about Canadians who are getting that plan B going. They want to get the hell out, which is why I want to read part of this email from a beautiful young Canadian, 100% Canadian gringa. That would be Canadiense, Canadiense. Following the Latin rules of gringo and gringa distinction I just pointed out, you know, Americano, Americano would be pure European ancestry American. Then Canadiense, Canadiense would be pure Canadian, born in Canada with European heritage. Got that? Confused yet? Now, if you think the U.S. government, Treasury Department, that is the IRS people, are tough on their citizens, listen to the way the Canadian Revenue Service treats theirs. All right, the email starts, "Hi, Johnny. I'm going through your Expat Plan B Academy program right now. And in one of the first videos, you said that U.S. citizens abroad can earn up to $104,100 and some change every year and pay zero income tax on that money, and it's perfectly legal as long as you're living outside the states for a year, etc., etc. Living as a resident in a foreign country, you get that big tax break, as long as that income's not coming from the U.S. but from a foreign source also." Then she says, "Johnny, from everything I can find online, it appears that Canada is completely different. You must pay 25% tax on all income earned. There is not even $1 that you can earn that would be tax exempt, even if you're living outside of Canada for a year or more. On the Canadian Revenue Agency's website, it even gives an example. It goes like this. If you're a Canadian living in France and you're a bartender in France, for example, and earn $20,000 per year, you must report that to the Canadian Revenue Service and pay tax on it. And the only way you can avoid paying taxes is if you can prove you're a non-resident of Canada. And my understanding of this is you must have permanent residency outside of Canada and have a bank account in that other country and live less than 183 days per calendar year in Canada. However, I'm sure you've heard this before, so it's not new to you, but it is to me. As long as I am still on the title to the home that I own in Canada or jointly own in Canada, and or I still have a Canadian bank account or a Canadian valid driver's license, or still have a spouse or dependents in Canada, I can never claim that I am a non-resident of Canada, regardless how many days I spend away from Canada annually, and regardless whether I have permanent residency in a foreign country, or have a bank account in a foreign country, or a driver's license in that foreign country or not. What a effing ripoff. Eh, Johnny? All right, me Johnny here. See how nice those Canadians are? She's all pissed off, but still, she strategically placed only one F-bomb at the right place, too, in that email. So far, anyway. Then she says, "So, according to the Canadian government, if I live 365 days a year in China, but my spouse still lives in Canada, or I have a bank account in Canada, or I have a house or a piece of a house in Canada, or I still have a driver's license that's valid in Canada, then I must file personal income taxes and pay them on 25% of all the money that I earned outside. At least the money I admit to earning outside." Hey, my kind of gal. Then she says, "Johnny, that's some kind of effing bull feces if you ask me. But thankfully now, anyway, Canada does not have tax treaties with places like Guatemala, Honduras, and most Latin American countries. So I'm not sure how Justin Trudeau and his little perverted socked feet would ever know how much little me actually earns while soaking up the sun in one of those non-tax treaty countries." So finally, she says, "If any of the information I'm sharing here with you is not correct, if I've interpreted wrong, please correct me. Because you see, I'm moving along with developing my plan B with this in mind, and I don't want to be basing any of it on misinformation. So have a great day. Canadiense, Canadiense D." Well, ain't that a kick in the head? And you know what? I just verified all of that with a very smart new Canadian expat who came to my Expat Insider Seminar just a couple of weeks ago. He verified all of your concerns. You're completely right about that. In fact, he's one of those people who's disillusioned and disgusted with the Canadian tax and revenue service too, along with some other major complaints and how he's been screwed by the Canadian bureaucracy. But he did jump through a million hoops to get his paperwork finished in time to come down to the seminar and start his own residency process. In fact, when I passed on your concerns to him, Dee, he just shook his head, spat on the ground, and dropped just one F-bomb. And here's what he said. Yes, Johnny, she is absolutely correct. You must sever your residential ties to all things Canadian to be a non-resident for tax purposes. To pay no Canadian taxes, you must pass what they call the residency test. If you leave but retain title or partial title to any residence, you are a factual resident. That's what they call it, deeming you temporarily outside the country, no matter how many years or decades you decide to do so. Therefore, you are deemed to be a resident for tax purposes, meaning you pay tax on inside and all outside income too. One other thing, though, he says you can retain a Canadian bank account if you're a pensioner. You need to do so since Canadian pension funds and or annuity payouts usually will not send their funds to an offshore payee or bank. So you're forced to have a Canadian bank account or you just won't get that pension dough. And he has another tip. He says, did you know a Canadian driver's license address can be changed to a friend or a lawyer slash notary's address, or even to the address of a remailing service? So there are a few stealthy options, but you'll have to figure out how to use them yourself. Then, nice guy that he is, most Canadians are, he gives links that explain all the criteria direct from the Canadian government's very own malignant websites. So any or all of you Canadians up there thinking about that Plan B move, or you're somewhere along in the process, just shoot me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the links. But first, you just might want to buy a case of Molson, because after you read that stuff, you're going to weep. So there you have it, the mystery surrounding expat Canadians and their tax system. And I thought us Americanos had it bad. Well, I feel sorry for you, Canadienses. And for that, I want to thank Wayne and Miss D, who got the conversation rolling and dropped only two F-bombs in the process. Just the kind of thing you'd expect from two very pissed off but nice guy Canadians. Eh? All right, in the like we need more bad news department, here's some news that's kind of sickening. And I've got three sources here I'm going to pick and choose from. One of them, Sovereign Man. The headline on all three of these articles is, the IRS will revoke 362,000 U.S. citizens' passports. And after you hear that, you have to stop for a second, take a deep breath, swallow, and say, what the f***? All right, it says about 2.5 years ago, President Obama quietly signed into law a particularly nasty piece of legislation called the FAST Act. That's F-A-S-T-A-C-T. And the letters stand for Fixing America's Surface Transportation. Sounds innocuous and helpful, doesn't it? However, buried into that act, and you know Congress just loves to bury provisions and pork into legislation most people will never read. Now, buried in that act, in section 32,101. Wait a minute. Just think about that section number there. 32,101. I mean, come on, who could even read 32,000 plus sections of an act? That's not humanly possible, and we're just talking about 32,101. Who knows how many more sections are in that act? I don't even want to guess, but it certainly does show the magnitude, idiocy, and ridiculousness, is that a word, of the congressional lawmaking process, doesn't it? Anyway, section 32,101 of the FAST Act requires the U.S. State Department to revoke or deny the passport of any taxpayer that the IRS deems to have seriously delinquent tax debt, defining seriously delinquent tax debt as owing more than $50,000. All right, me, Johnny, here again. Now, you longtime listeners will remember that I mentioned this a couple of years ago, that it was on the horizon. Well, it took a few years. It's, after all, government, right? But the IRS has finally started enforcing the law. As a result, earlier this month, the IRS acknowledged they had sent out at least 362,000 names to the State Department, telling them to get on with it, start revoking or denying those passports. And that seems to only be the beginning. The IRS is sending these names out in batches, so there'll be many more to come. They say they want to finish it up by the end of the year. Now, there are many, many things wrong with this, but they're doing it. For one thing, there's no due process here. It's purely administrative, which means there's limited oversight. Your name could easily, accidentally even, end up on some IRS list. Because we know the government can't keep its own records straight, and they lose things all the time, and they get hacked regularly, even by teenagers. And, for example, it's been proven time and time again, you could call up the IRS hotline, where trained IRS agents are supposed to give you the correct answers to your questions. Make 5 separate calls, ask the very same questions to 5 separate agents, and get 5 different answers. It's been proven. There have been articles written about it. Look it up. So we all know every government agency has a problem with data integrity. And what about people with similar names, or people who are juniors or seniors, or Harry Smith II or III for that matter? In fact, you probably heard me tell the story of good old John Galt when he came down to Latin America to go for his residency. Turns out, as I remember, he was John Galt III, which threw a big monkey wrench into the Latin American paperwork process. Well, the same thing happens all the time with every government agency, whether it's the first or the third world. Which brings us back to the age-old man-on-the-street question. Can you think of anything that the government does right and that they haven't royally screwed up? Hey, just look at policing in the big cities like Chicago and Cleveland. What about the terrible state of the roads and the infrastructure? Look at Social Security. That's dead broke. There's no fund. How about the military, the FDA, public school systems, the welfare system, the VA? It's as if they've self-selected imbeciles, pinheads, a-holes, and dickheads. People with room temperature IQs who can't balance their own checkbooks to run every one of those multi-billion dollar rat hole agencies. So what you've got is an IRS that's been hacked over and over again, with billions of records managed by people who can't agree on much, with old and unworkable technology that's just absolutely prone to data breaches. Now, come on, if you think that the IRS could come up with a list of hundreds of thousands of people without making mistakes, that in itself is the punchline of a bad joke. And how about this? Suppose you're on that list. Well, who are you supposed to argue with then? Is it the IRS or the State Department? Because it's the IRS sending out the notices and the State Department enforces them. So who do you go to? Who do you appeal to? Man, what a freaking mess. But the larger point is what this really means about your citizenship. Think about it. A passport is the most common document of your individual citizenship. And wow. They can just press a button and take it away from you. So now Big Brother can easily take away your right to movement, your right to travel. Which means, guess what? It ain't a right no more. They're telling us it's a privilege, something they can take away that really wasn't yours to begin with. Just like your property. Even if you've had a mortgage burning party, just try not paying your property taxes for 2 years and see how fast your county puts up your house for auction. So you really never own your property. You're just renting it from the government. Your yearly property taxes being your rent. And likewise, enforcing Obama's FAST Act shows you're not really a citizen. You're just renting your citizenship from the government. And your rent would be what you owe each year in taxes. Oh, and how about this? Congressman Dave Camp once commented that the tax code of the U.S. is 10 times as long as the Bible, with none of the good news and tons of people being thrown to the lions. He was responding to a 2013 report from the National Taxpayers Advocate Group, which shows American businesses and individuals spend more than 6 billion hours a year complying with ridiculously complex tax law, which is the equivalent of 3 million U.S. citizens working full-time year-round. Not only that, the report said if tax compliance were an industry, it would be one of the top 10 corporations in the United States. And talk about the definition of user-unfriendly. Any American would rather have a colon flush than spend 10 minutes with an IRS agent. Hey, even my grandma's hand would shake when she filled out her form. And we know the IRS uses its power to target political enemies. Look at the dirty tricks of Obama, Bush, and Clinton. And now, in the U.S., you're really only free to leave the country, even for a short trip to Cancun, if the IRS says so. And as long as you keep paying your taxes indefinitely, they'll give you a hall pass. Maybe. And we already know that the U.S. is now restricting passports for people who are delinquent in child support and alimony. And we're just now seeing the hammer fall on people who've been delinquent in their school loans. And you know, it's only going to get worse. When you have an oppressive government, does it ever get better? So you really have two choices. You stay on that treadmill up in the U.S. and live out the rest of your stressful life as a sick and unhappy camper. Or you can do, like many astute people, get your residency in a foreign country that leads to passport and nationality. Once you got that second passport, doesn't really matter at all what kind of restrictions they put on your U.S. passport because you've got dual citizenship. And if you find one day you can't renew your U.S. passport or it's blocked, you just put it in a drawer or the washing machine, whatever, and grab that second or third nationality passport and stay as free as you want to be. Meanwhile, there are millions of Latinos in the U.S. who don't have passports or valid ID documents at all. Isn't that funny? By the way, how's your Plan B coming? And finally, a word about Starbucks. Now, you've heard me say that they're popping up all over the place here in Latin America now. That was one thing I certainly never could have predicted. I thought, look, with all these great coffee shops around here with dollar and dollar and a half coffee, grown here in Latin America too, right at the source, I thought if Starbucks tries it down here with $4, $5, and $6 a cup latte mocha cafe de javas, well, they'd die on the vine and find out soon enough it was a big mistake. Well, I was wrong. Who'd have thunk that Starbucks only shows up in high-end Latin business districts where taller, whiter Latin women rattle their jewelry, the real stuff, and Latin guys drive Range Rovers, Minis, and BMW SUVs with their bodyguard brigades in tow. Down here in Latin America, it's all about being seen. Meanwhile, up in the States, Starbucks is not really selling coffee anymore. It's become a kind of a social movement. One thing's for sure, the quality of the coffee's gone down. Everyone tells me that. And now Starbucks is offering safe places for homeless people to sleep and use the restrooms and for IV drug users to safely dispose of their needles. And it's also a place where transgender people will never be misidentified with the wrong pronoun. That's what Starbucks is doing up in the States now. In fact, my friends in Chicago tell me if you go into certain Starbucks up there, you could very well end up sitting next to a homeless person that kind of reeks. Yep, they're allowed to use the restrooms and take advantage of the AC. Hey, nothing wrong with that, and if you don't like it, use the drive-up window. But I tell you, if Starbucks ever tried to export those social norms to the Starbucks here in Latin America, man, that would surely kill the goose that laid the golden egg. All you have to do is walk into any Starbucks here in Latin America and you'll see it's the exclusive domain of the taller, whiter, more affluent Latin American gringo wannabes and their entitled kids who go there only to be seen. Because only upscale, high-end Latins can afford it. And I'll tell you, the day they allow homeless people to come in and use the bathroom and linger, that's the day the polish comes off the turd. You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!